Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beyond the Scenes, the podcast that goes deeper into segments and topics that originally aired on The Daily Show. This is what you got to think about this podcast as. Like, this podcast is like a secret family recipe. We got all the ingredients to make that homemade dish that only your mama knows how to make, and she refuses to write it down or pass it on to anybody because she don't want y'all to be happy after she dies. And you could really do the recipe justice, but your mama be hating it. It is what it is. So yeah, that's what this podcast is. I'm Roy Wood Jr. And today we're talking about a segment we filmed back in 2016 that asked a very important question. Is the porn industry racist? Roll the clip. Well, no, not that porn clip. Roll a Daily Show clip about porn. Don't roll porn.
This is the only business in the world license where a female can say yay or nay to a person just because of the color of skin. Black men are particularly portrayed in porn as being thugs, criminals.
What are you black men doing in my house?
Black women are portrayed as extremely ghetto. The titles are racist itself.
The porn industry will take anything painful to black people and just add a pair of titties. Black Wives Matter, 12 Inches a Slave. Hell, they even remade Roots.
Look, you girls is me killed around here.
Anybody that would say that there isn't racism in porn really needs to be slapped out of.
Today I'm joined by segment director Stacey Angeles, who helped produce this piece. Stacey, how you doing, old friend?
I'm great, Roy. Always love talking about porn with you.
Well, thank you. I'm happy that you're the only person I talk about porn with at work as well. Hello, HR. Aww. I know you're listening. Also joining us for this conversation are adult entertainers, life partners, and business partners. They're co-creators of the adult film production company, Royal Fetish Films. She is a licensed clinical therapist. Please welcome Jet Setting Jasmine to the program. Jet Setting, how you doing? Madam Jet?
Doing
Madam
well.
Madam Setting? Whoa. Madam Jasmine?
I like all those.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll take it. And also, your partner in business and your partner in real life, King Noir. King, how you doing?
Peace, peace. It's good to be here.
Now, I'm excited to hear about some stories of racism because you know that's what I love talking about as a black person. But first, Stacey, I know how this piece kind of came to be. I don't remember who else was in on the inception of it, but I do remember Trayvon Free coming into my office and he just goes, "Hey man, you want to meet Misty Stone?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, why not? I'll do." And keep in mind, up until that point, the pieces I had done were police reform, the 20th anniversary of the Million Man March, and betting on the election. I was so happy just to do something that was just completely off the wall. And if I recall, you were relatively new to the show. So what did you think when they brought this piece to you?
No, I was super new. And so it was going to be my third piece. So I think there were five pieces floating around. And obviously I got drawn to porn because everybody loves porn. Even people who say they don't watch porn love porn. But then I saw the story and I was like, oh, this is a little bit darker, because Trayvon sent me an article that was like, white women were demanding more pay to sleep with black men. And as disgusting as that was, it was shocking to me because, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, but when I think of the porn industry, I always think of like sexual free, open-mindedness. I never thought that it would be something that had so many boundaries or whatever. And then when I was researching more on it, I saw that not only is it racist, they're like capitalizing on it with the titles and the premises. And it seemed like a narrative that they were kind of getting away with. And also, I never worked with Roy, and so it was my first piece with Roy. So I was very excited about that.
Yeah, but what did you find most surprising? Because I'll be honest, like when I was doing a little bit of the research going into, you know, for the listeners, as a correspondent, it's very important that you get the backstory on the topic that you're researching because it makes you a better, a more adept interviewer when you're speaking with your scene partners, if you will, for this particular, that we don't call them scene partners, but the people you're interviewing, you want to know what the hell you're talking about, right? And so I just remember seeing all of these random racist porn titles. We had a researcher, Devin Leary, who was with the show at the time, and she had to watch hours of porn and find the stereotypes so that we could find the jokes in them. And so, like,
her desk was so popular.
Like 12 years a slave, like just parodies of just popular films. They were just like, yeah, let's flip that into a porn. So was there anything that shocked you about this shoot?
I was going to mention Devin Leary because she did all the research and she was a segment producer at the time. She's amazing. And I said, you know, we need to find a bunch of porn that has that really banks on all those stereotypes of Black people being criminals, breaking in, thugs, you know, whatever. And I was thinking she might have to dig deep, like maybe. And it was like instant. She's like, oh, my God, I found one. And the titles aren't even subtle. They're just like, oh, no, a Black man broke into my house. Oh, no, there's a Black man inside my wife. Like they were just, it was an embarrassment of riches. And it was just like so much. She almost gave me too much stuff. And then that was like insanely surprising to me. And then the second thing that was really surprising was hearing things white women were more willing to do over having sex with a Black man, like triple anal penetration and prostitution, and everything was shocking. Because, like I was saying earlier, I really thought it was just an open-minded industry, which maybe I am naive in that.
White girls will ask for double, triple, quadruple the amount to do an interracial scene.
This seems to be the only industry where a white person can just straight up go, I ain't working with no Black people today. You couldn't do that if you worked at a fast food spot. You couldn't just go, who's cooking? Stanley. Oh, baby, you got to pay me time and a half if I'm gonna be working with these Negroes.
Jasmine, give me the first time you were on set and you know, like when you were in the middle of racism, like when racism is in progress, mm-hmm. and you just be sitting there talking to yourself. King know what I'm talking about too. You just be like, am I experiencing racism? This feel, oh, okay, Jasmine, just hold the chicken and biscuit in your hand and bend over, okay, and action. He's like, wait a minute, did he just ask me to hold a chicken wing and a biscuit? Like, walk us through, you know, both of you, walk us through that first time that you discovered the level of discrimination that existed in the industry, or were you put up on game about that from the jump?
So I think we're both going to be able to give you a range of examples. And so for me, I was put up on, like, the reason why Royal Fetish Films exists is because as a consumer of porn, I was like, I can't watch it and listen to, you know, I can't listen to the fake Black scent. I can't listen to the stereotypical tropes. I can't listen to the chicken and biscuit jokes. Like it became a form of entertainment for me that was like, if I'm enjoying this, is something wrong with me. And I'm not enjoying it, so why am I watching it? Now, where am I going to go to get inspiration to masturbate, right? So when King and I started working together, it was like, we need to create something that we could feel proud to watch. And we were hearing this from, we're already doing sex education, hosting parties, and we were already hearing this, like, I don't watch porn specifically from Black women because we don't see ourselves reflected. It's degrading. It's hard to feel sexy when you are seeing the lowest representation of yourself and your people. So I already knew, like, whatever we created was going to be something that I wanted to watch. Now, that being said, as we started to become more popular, at least for me, people were starting to ask me to shoot for their company. And so I come from in this industry from a privileged space where I can say, like, no, thank you. That sounds like I'm going to be sitting there in exactly how you describe, like, I'm in the middle of some racism. And so I was able to say, kind of know right off the bat, if they're like, oh, well, the scene is going to call for you to do some twerking. Nothing's wrong with twerking, but you've never seen me twerk. Why would you be casting me for that? Like, I'm probably not the best person. Like, if you want to see great pointed toes and some modern dance, like, sign me up. But for twerking, you know, you're just kind of making an assumption that because I'm Black, and I do porn, that that's what you're going to get, right? So, but I will say that what I have seen, and I've worked enough corporate jobs and for government agencies to know that sort of like baseline of racism that's there. I look at where the bottom line, where the dollars roll, and I found that my white counterparts were getting money for hair, for makeup, and for costuming when they shoot. And for me, it was like, make sure you bring your own makeup kit and, you know, we'll do something with your hair. You know, you have that style that's so edgy. And bring sound a couple
like
of
on some sitcoms. I can relate to this.
Keep okay, going. Bring a couple of, bring a couple of outfits, and we'll choose from what you have. And then later to find out that this is a line item when my white counterparts shoot. You know, so there are there's that. There's also, I have found, like, even leading into this interview, I was like, let me just go. Let me Google myself. Let me Google myself and the N-word. And because I know I don't say it. So somebody had to put it out there. And a lot of my scenes have been licensed using words that I did not agree to. Now, since those are a lot of those scenes are older ones, since we got even further up on game, we now make it a part of our contract that they cannot sell our scenes using any type of derogatory language. Because a lot of times you might be thinking that you're shooting for a company that has your best interest in mind and that sees you as whoever you are. And then, you know, three times around, you're in Germany as black nigger girl twerks on big black dick husband, or not, definitely wouldn't say husband, criminal, you know?
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or ghetto women give blowjobs to pay their power bill. Like, it's always like why they need the money in the description. So I've right. heard, I've never been to any of these sites.
These right, titles are so long.
I think also with a lot of the times when it comes to just that open-mindedness of the industry that Stacey had just mentioned, it might be open-minded for the white performers. Like, there's a certain level of freedom that they have even within their titles, but within the black titles, there's this whole desperation that is also put with it as well. And for me, I have experienced all the way from the subtle racism to the, I've been called nigger on set before. You know, I was at a shoot house.
Like in the scene?
No, it wasn't even in the scene. I was
just a random crew member.
No, it was another performer. She wanted to have sex with me off camera after our scene. And I was like, nah, I got things to do. I was actually about to call Jasmine and check in on the family. And she catches an attitude and messages. We had the same agent. And she messaged the agent, King is being an uppity nigger. To my agent, he won't have sex with me off camera. And you know what uppity mean? When they call you uppity, that just means you're not doing what white folks want you to do.
Yeah, they trying to break you.
Exactly. The company tried to tell me that I should still film with her. I basically had to tell them nothing that I shot with her should ever be released. I had them sign, like, I wrote some shit on a paper right there and was like, y'all signing this, y'all never releasing this, or there's gonna be a problem. So then they tried to tell other people in the industry not to work with me because I'm a problem, because I don't want to be called a nigger by my co-star.
But if she's a white woman, she holds more power than you in the industry, because white women are kind of the golden geese, fiscally speaking, for a lot of these production companies, right?
So I want to challenge that, Roy. The perception, right, is that white women are the geese. And I think that that's where it's the reflection of society in the industry. But when you look at what the top selling genre is, it's interracial. You cannot have, you know, a white woman alone is not making the top dollar. When you look at the top searches, it's interracial, hentai, MILF, right? So there are certain subsets of the people that are participating in the industry that actually are the clickbait. They are, you know, so this idea that, you know, white women have specific power in the industry, it's more of a reflection of our larger society and how we see them as, you know, without fault, to be protected, to be uplifted, to be, you know, held in this prized position. But if we look at the bottom line, they need to sleep with someone other than themselves to bring in the highest number of clicks, advertisements, and money.
What is the dynamic on set, though? Like, if you writing cease and desist on the back of a napkin on set, what is the HR situation in that? Like, okay, like, let me break it down. Like, cause all I know is like acting on a set. And yeah. There was some time years ago, I played an extra. I played a slave in the background of a Civil War reenactment. This is like 97. This is my first ever television credit. And we're all dressed like slaves. And it's, you know, they're showing Union soldiers walk by. And the director comes over and goes, you know, could you guys mime like you're clapping? Like, he wanted us basically to be doing like some humming and singing around the fire. Type of, like singing slave hymnals. And we all kind of looked at each other. And was like, yo, no, I just kind of want to. I'm already dressed like a slave, my man. Just let me just sit here and just chill. How much do you get to challenge when they try to add a little, they try to, like, you agree to one thing and then you get on set and they try and flip the script, King. Like, has there ever been a scenario where they try to come in and sprinkle a little race? Hey, you mind, King? I love what you're doing, but let me put a little racism on top of it real quick. Okay, and action. Let's do it again.
I mean, those are the times when you have to make a business decision. Where it's like, am I comfortable with this? Am I walking off set? Am I going to deal with whatever backlash is going to follow?
Because have you walked off set?
I have walked off set. I have definitely walked off set. I have had, that's why I said, I've dealt with so many. It's sometimes it be that type of racism where it's like, I have a lot of black friends. I grew up with black friends. Like just recently I had this thing where he was, this is the director. This isn't like another performer, this is the director. The first time I ever went into somebody's house and it smelled like chitlins, I'm like, what does that have to do with anything that we're doing right now? You know what I'm saying? It's
like, we haven't smelled chitlins in the house in like
weeks. I don't eat pork. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's like stuff like that. And it did wind up having to, it led to a conversation that I was like, I might never work for this company again, but I need to have this conversation in a way that's not going to completely make them be like, you know, angry black men, but they got to stop. And it had kind of led to this thing where I can't go. He was talking about Atlanta, like some neighborhood. He was like, you know, white people can't go there. And I was like, where in America can't white people go? Y'all own stuff. You got to go to the hood to collect your rent or there's a Burger King there or there's whatever. You know what I'm saying? There's no place in America that you can't go. But I know if I'm Ahmaud Arbery and I'm running through a neighborhood, I know I can't be there. I can't go to Bensonhurst. I can't go to sundown towns. Correct. That's our reality. That's not your reality. But it's shaped that way. So I had to have this conversation on set with the director. And I knew, like, and at this point, it's just like, I'm not in the mood to fuck after this. I know, look, it's not.
Oh yeah. Also, there's
not
still a scene to shoot.
Exactly. It's not going to happen today. And trying to explain that, like, you sometimes will have to. It's not going to happen for me, and you don't always have to. Sometimes you're going to have to put it like, I can't work with you, but sometimes you just gotta take that L, and that's the tough part about our industry because there isn't an HR department that I could say, hey, you know. Who are you going to go to with most of these companies? These are their own companies, or these directors are also the heads and owners of their company.
Is there a union? Pardon me if this is an ignorant question, but is there like an actors union for adult entertainers?
There are some organizations. There's the Free Speech Coalition that works to uphold some forms of advocacy for performers. And there's also a guild, but it's very, very loose. I mean, part of the issue is that the porn industry is stigmatized from the rest of the workforce. I mean, we literally have a hashtag that sex work is work, right? The only time that we're really recognized as being a fiscal part of the society is taxes. That's the only time, you know, is that what goes into our bank and what comes out for taxes. But trying to uphold like a discrimination suit, sexual harassment and those type of things. Think about what court are we bringing that to that also validates that what we're doing is work, that what we're doing is consensual, that what we're doing is moral. Just sort of thinking about the pandemic that we're still in. I know everyone else is out of it, but there were the PPP loans that came out for people who, you know, had businesses, were trying to keep their employees working. We have a a full production company that we wanted to sustain over the pandemic and keep people working. But the morality clause, there's literally a morality clause in these loans that although we are tax paying, legally producing, producing content, paying our taxes, et cetera, we don't fall into the requirements. And so, you know, because the structures that are supposed to be able to support us with taking, whether these are claims up for discrimination, hell, hate crimes, if you will, right? Being called a nigger on set, sexual harassment, any type of harassment, or the financial discrimination that I talked about where my co-stars are getting paid more for the same work, if not less, than what I'm doing. It's really difficult. It's even difficult to find a sex worker-friendly attorney that'll take up your clause. So we are really off. It's like a marginalized industry with marginalized people within that industry. It's like we're in the margins of the margin.
Stacey, I know within the piece, we talked a little bit about, you know, how the porn industry perpetuates racist stereotypes, you know, in the present. The thing that I hated was that we really weren't able to get deeper into the history of porn, you know, in terms of the roots of the racism and all of the other different. Talk to me a little bit about some of the pieces and parts that we wish we would have had space for. For the record, I pitched porn part two, but then Trump got elected and, you know, we had different priorities within the building.
I mean, I remember initially reading a pitch about it being like, we wanted to make this like the civil rights movement of the porn industry, making you like the Martin Luther King of it, and trying to, you were trying to like,
what's your dream, Roy?
You were trying to, I think he was like trying to inspire white women to sleep with black men to, you know, end that stigma.
But with everybody though, because that was the, you just brought it up.
Wait, there was also a hashtag, I think there was like a hashtag Black Dongs Matter. Like there was like, I remember like a bunch of absurd ideas that like popped up.
There's a problem. Black people are constantly being portrayed as criminals and sexual predators. Porn companies aren't doing anything to change it. So I am. For a limited time only, see black people getting portrayed positively in my new porn series, Affirmative Actions, starring me, Goodwood Jr.
I'm horny.
I'm busy. I run a Fortune 500 company. I do not have time to come home and just bang you repeatedly.
We only had time to focus on black discrimination. But then there's also the issue of Asians, you know, being presented as
submissive
or made. And just, I'm so quiet, and Islamophobia being a big part of it. And then, you're not light skinned black, you're Latino. Pretend to be a Mexican.
Yes.
So
that's right. You wanted to go into that.
That happens to me all the time. They'd be like, can you play Puerto Rican?
What does that
mean?
Just
like, how do you? How do you?
I'll be like, yo, Puerto Ricans are black too. They just were colonized by a different language. What do you want me to do? And then they get scared.
Sex differently? Do you talk with an accent? Hola, chica. I am here for the donde grande. Like, that's a terrible Puerto Rican. Please don't cancel me.
Stop playing Puerto Rican.
You're doing it.
We can't even. So for example. I'm Filipino and Panamanian.
Oh my God, me too. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm Filipino.
Hey, Pinoy power. So, but you would be casted. You wouldn't be casted as Filipino, neither am I. You know, I'm fine. Like I know I'm a black Filipino and a black Panamanian. But when people ask me, like, you know, what should we put here? And then when it comes out, it's still like
black lady.
You know.
I'm so sorry. This has been like lingering over my mind. King, when you were talking about that offensive woman, whatever her name is, I don't remember. We don't have to name her. How the hell do you perform with someone after they throw all these offensive racist remarks at you? How do you perform with them on camera after that? I don't
personally. For me, like I said, with that particular situation, they had to remove her from the follow-up shoots. And it's funny you mention Puerto Rican, because when I was shooting the rest of the scene, like another part of this film with two other performers, one who was there for when she said, when the whole thing happened, and the other who they brought in to replace her. And then the director yells cut, and then one of the women said, "Why did you get mad? I thought you were Puerto Rican." And
that
was the end of my working period. Like literally in the middle of fucking, I was like, I'm done. I can't do this no more. And the craziest shit is they shoot in Iowa. So I had to get out of Iowa.
Oh God. And it was in Iowa.
After this racist situation. And there's nobody to connect with in Iowa after you go through some racist shit. You can't just talk to the brother next to you because he ain't there. Yeah.
Let me find out they got some porn studios in Iowa, man. I've been going to the wrong spot.
It's like in those kind of situations where I said, like, it's like you're going to have to make not only a business decision, but there's a certain decision that you have to make for your own humanity. And it's like, nah, y'all going to have to pay me the kill fee for this shoot. Because this isn't appropriate. This is a bad situation. Y'all don't deserve my dick no more. I gotta go.
Bring it home.
That's what I tell women too. Stop talking. After the break, I want to get a little bit more into the work that you all are doing at Royal Fetish Films and how you all are helping to solve this problem. And we need to talk a little bit about your boy Marty Klein, Stacey, who was in the segment.
Don't say he's my boy. That's not my boy.
Well, you the one found him. I didn't want to interview Marty Klein.
Okay.
Talking about it's not racism if you don't want to watch black people on camera having sex. Whatever, Marty. We'll get into that after the break. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond the Scenes, we are talking about racism and porn, a little segment that I did back in 2016. Shot some of the interviews out there. I didn't know this, King and Jasmine. I didn't know that that the porn industry, y'all rent out a nice big 6-bedroom house. Each bedroom is a different universe of a set. And there's just multiple adult films being shot concurrently all in one house. And I was like, wow, that was like the most shocking thing. Like, because I don't know why, just growing up watching porn, I just always thought that was somebody's real house. Like, the concept of a film set did not register with me. I thought they were just shooting at somebody's crib.
Actually, me too.
That's good. Y'all were into the fantasy.
That movie magic right there, you know?
Yeah, I was like, that looked like a roach on the wall. I know where that house is.
You know these Airbnbs don't always be clean now.
That's wild. You want to know something that's really wild? I've seen a porn one time. I've been in so many hotel rooms over my 25 years of comedy. I can tell the hotel by the quilt pattern. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, oh no, that's a Hampton Inn. I'd be staying at Hampton Inn. But let's talk about Royal Fetish Films and the work that you all are hoping to accomplish with that company, because you know, the first thing I want to do, let's set the table and just talk about the history of discrimination and racism in porn and white women saying they make less money if they have sex with a black person and what it is exactly you all are trying to undo with your film company.
So I think a lot of times people like to compartmentalize whatever industry it is, whether it's porn or music or Hollywood film, whatever it is, and think that the racism that exists within it is somehow specific to just that industry, but it always goes back to the same shit. You know, America is born, rooted, and grew up on racism. You know, yeah. America's number one industry was our ancestors here. You know, like just running through the numbers of our worth, our ancestors' worth, being worth more than the country and the currency of this country going back to the 1800s, right? But the important part to think about with the stereotypes that we see in porn is that those stereotypes were born in how they sold us, how they purchased us, and the fact that, for example, like in Virginia and Maryland, their number one export, if you will, and crop was our ancestors, was black folk. and they have breeding plantations. So like a lot of times people talk about tobacco, rice, and cotton, but America also had breeding plantations that they sold our ancestors on, and they had specific ways that they did it. So like, for example, black men were a lot of times specifically purchased by the size of our penis, because whatever these racist slave owners back in the day, they were like, oh, he'll probably make more babies because his penis is bigger, or whatever the fuck they thought.
On some horse stallion type shit.
Exactly. Breeding. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, so that is one stereotype that we see to this day, because if you look at just percentages across the planet, man, dicks range. There's big and small of all races. But the perception of black men's penises being larger is because for however long, these white men just sat there with black men on a stage looking at us butt naked and trying to select our dick size. The shit has been imprinted on their brain because that's what they look for in us. It's also what they fear in us because they have raped so many black women, black men, and black children over this time. You know, when you look at just the history of film and the history of entertainment, first ever, you know, popular, groundbreaking film, they say, is Birth of a Nation. You know, and Birth of a Nation was all about the Ku Klux Klan stopping black men from raping white women. Yep. Mandingo was all about a slave owner who goes on a trip and was afraid that the mistress of the house was going to sleep with his slave Mandingo because he had been raping all these black women on the plantation. And this is American popular culture. First popular culture in music was minstrel music, black, white people in blackface imitating us. So all of this stuff culminates in porn because these fantasies have been stuck in their head for hundreds of years. So now they get to put out 12 inches a slave as a thing for, just like had you mentioned, for 12 years a slave, or this fear of any kind of movement that we have in a positive direction, where you saw like that film that was called Black Wives Matter. Mm-hmm. These feelings and perceptions, mm-hmm. Yeah, they're rooted in all of these fears and racist ideas that they've had of us for years and years. And if you look at a lot of the stereotypes of black people, they are also based on what they did to us on the plantation and kind of how they manifest themselves in the world today.
So I think something that's really important when you said, like, what are we doing to fix this? Hopefully the work that we do, I hope that changes the industry. But so much more important to us is helping us realize our range of sex and sexuality. And I say our black and brown people, who also are terribly impacted by these stereotypes, not just from like, oh, I can't find anything to watch in porn, but I don't have any reflection of what I'm supposed to be like sexually. You know, we talk about folks that are on some of these sets and can't walk off, that they don't have, you know, the means to be able to make that type of financial decision, how that leaves their psyche. We deserve to be a part of this industry just like anyone else. If this is how we would like to monetize our body, some people want to type for a living. Some people want to, you know, play sports, act, what have you. We choose to have sex and to do sexual acts for a living. We deserve to be in this industry without harm. We want our population to be able to type in, you know, black couples in romance, BDSM, kinky, black and kinky, and see something where they are not the fetish, that there's an actual act of kink, of fetish, of sex, that doesn't have to be degrading, that doesn't fall into these racist tropes, that allows us to see other types of bodies interacting with each other, people from different walks of life, you know, just so many different expressions that unfortunately we don't see. The other work that we're doing at Royal Fetish Films are, we are sticking it to these larger companies. We're going on their pages and we are consulting with them and helping them understand that if you can't see it for yourself, see it for your bottom line. Your search engines, all your algorithms show that people want to see us in film. And when I look at your site and you point me to your premium content or your front page, all I see are white women that are of a certain size and appear to be of a certain age, a younger age. And that's a mismatch. You're not even marketing to your consumers. You're not marketing to what people are looking for. We're challenging them to see the black dollar in the adult industry. It's important for us to help our people be represented, to see themselves, because the way that you, what you see in porn, we know that it's a primary source for sex education, because there is no sex education in this country. So, you know, if people are gonna learn there, I want to make sure that my interactions, my sexual interactions, aren't based on somebody's terrible education that they got from, you know, the front page of one of these tube sites. If people are going to learn that this is how I have sex, like, it's important in our films where we are showing people are having conversation about what kind of sex actually you want to participate, that you have autonomy of your body, that you, you know, can be bound and suspended and checked on.
And showing that on camera.
And showing it on camera.
Showing that as part of the scene.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and consent and intimacy and closeness and conversation.
Yes.
Through the actual process of intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our shit ranges from sapiosexual all the way to like hardcore BDSM. And everything in between, because Black sexuality is all of that. And there were so many times people would say stuff to us like, that's some white people shit. And we would challenge that. And like, no, it's not. You really think people only started fucking this way within the last 300-400 years? No. Our people have been spanking each other on the ass for thousands of years. You know what I'm saying? Open your mind. You know? So that's what like really got us into like, how could we decolonize these ideas and open up our people's minds and do it in a beautiful way? Because sometimes when you look at mainstream porn, it be looking like they don't even give motherfuckers some coconut oil to not be ashy on set, because they don't know how to make our bodies look good anyway. You know what I'm saying?
From the lighting to coconut oil, the wigs, the makeup, you know, all of it.
And having things that reflect our culture, like music that you actually want to fuck to playing in the background instead of whatever sounds like, you know, from back in the day. We try to make everything that reflects our culture and who we are.
Stacey, I guess the challenge we have is trying to figure out a way to make everything they just said funny.
Like, I know,
How do you dig and navigate the seriousness of this topic and still find room for humor, other than getting me to talk to Dr. Marty Klein in the segment, who said, I'm going to paraphrase, but he basically said, if you're into some ghetto ass porn, it doesn't mean you're racist.
I think
it's
that anybody
fetish.
Who
That's
reads
just
racism into
it's not that
pornography,
big of a deal.
They're just prejudiced about certain kinds of sexual fantasies.
These are real titles. Oh my God, a black man banged my daughter in the ass. Black bull for hire. King Kong's ding dong.
It's a fantasy.
It's easy to find humor in something with such an outrageous counterpoint of view. But like, what were some of the other ways that you were able to find humor?
Man, working with you helps. You're very good at making depressing subject matters funny, which is a gift. I think when people are stupid and say, you know, terrible things, I think it's taking their logic and flipping it on them. So I think you did a good job of that when he was like, it's just a fantasy, like Star Wars or whatever. And you're like, okay, so let me get this straight.
Hey, you cracker bitch, you got some big ass breasts. Wanna squeeze them? That would be racist.
Yes.
But if I had an erection while I said it to her, that's fantasy?
It's a fantasy. It's like Star Wars. Porn is like Star Wars. It's not real.
When you say those words out of your mouth, you're like, he sounds. So I think one way to find the humor is just like these people that are so narrow-minded, taking their logic and taking it to the absurd extreme and, you know, flipping it.
To that point, Jasmine and King, then to Dr. Marty Klein, it's just fantasy. When do these fantasies cross a line? Like, how, like, is it about being tactful and showing only white, like if I only want my white woman with white men, but also do we like add, like you know, like on YouTube, where after you watch three videos, you got to watch a 15 second pop up. Do we show them 15 seconds of interracial before they go back to the all white?
I think one of the things is like, if you just think about it, if you went to the Daily Show and was like, I don't want to work with any Chinese people today, you would not have a job tomorrow.
No.
You know what I'm saying? But in porn, people say, I'm not working with any black people. And that might not even just mean fucking someone on camera. That could mean there's no black director or black key grip or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So that's one thing. And then also, as like, you know, have you ever heard the term Queen of Spades?
No, later on. Right.
So Queen of Spades is some racist ass shit, but it's white women who will only sleep with black men. And a lot of them, they get this tattoo of a Q with a spade. And anytime you see the letter Q by itself, it's usually a problem. So
y'all done took the goddamn alphabet and fucked it up. Oh,
but
why get the tattoo? What is
because
the point
it's
of the tattoo?
It's kind
of
like this whole like a branding. It's
is
it's
like a Black
branding.
Lives Matter oh shirt, but for like
it's
Q
more,
is like the Karen of the alphabet.
It's more like a White Lives Matter shirt in a way because you know if someone walk up to me and call me a spade in the street, we fight. You know what I'm saying? Like spade has been, it's a racist term. So basically, it's like I'm a queen of spades. So it kind of goes back to that history that I'm talking about from the plantation. Because a lot of times people only talk about overseers and slave masters raping slaves. Mistresses did the same thing, you know? So it's rooted in that same thing. Like these black men serve my pleasure. That's it. None of the black men that they work with, are they talking about his intellect, his creativity, his love for fine arts. It's literally, he is here to pleasure me. And that's all the purpose that he serves. And then going back to the Klein thing, it's like if you have a fantasy that is rooted in something that in the world is taking people's lives, it's problematic.
I like to use people's fantasies as a way of helping them understand like things outside of their fantasies, right? So when I'm working with therapists on how to use porn in practice, it's like, what does the porn that you watch, what does it say about you? How do you feel when you watch it, right? Does it, you know, if you're only watching this particular style, why is that? What is it telling you or informing you about those people, if it's like a specific type of people that you watch? You know, is it an attraction? What are you attracted to? Are you fetishizing the person? Are you letting out an aggression towards that person during that time? Is it because you're curious? And then helping them explore, what would that fantasy look like outside of the fantasy? Is there someone at work that you never speak to, but you just go home and like, you know, Google, I don't know, the janitor or something along those lines? What would that interaction be like? Can you interact with someone in a way that is not hypersexualized or fetishized? Or is your only connection, like King said, through these stereotypes? So, you know, there is, when people are sharing, if they're willing to share about their racist sexual fantasies, I know we can be so quick to just want to shut them off and call them racist, and that would be true, and that is okay. But if you do have like the capacity to go a little bit further, it's to, you know, help them become curious about why that is and how that is really shaping their ideas about these people in reality.
When you said that janitor thing, it made me think of this one site. It's like a mental institution, and the men play doctors and the women patients, right? No. And so I got booked for this site. And so like I go on their Twitter the day before and they're like shopping for the scene. And they're getting stuff from like Home Depot. They're getting like, you know, like the big yellow mop tub and stuff like that, and mops and shit. And so I hit my agent. I'm like, can you ask them what role they have me playing in this? And then so they were like, you're going to be the janitor.
What?
I was like, never. I was going to be the first black man on their site. And they were like, nah, you're going to play the janitor.
Why can't you be a doctor that also has sex with the patients unethically? Well, after the break, we're going to bring it home and ask a single question. Who else can help y'all make the change, and who is responsible for helping y'all clean up this racism in porn? This has been a good discussion thus far. Let me do a little research in a second tab while we go to this break. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beyond the scenes, this has been a wonderful conversation. I knew it would be serious, Stacey, but I just didn't know it would be so heavy and rich with just knowledge and just folks straightening this stuff out. Because, you know, Jasmine, as a therapist, like, you have to approach this from a, like you can't, you don't have the ability to just yell at white people and white come and go, it's racist and y'all need to stop. You have to, like, get into the idiosyncratic aspects of the, well, the finances, it'll make more money. Did you know that your consumers would also enjoy, like, talk a little bit about that aspect of it, of trying to turn the corner with people who don't understand just how damaging and emotionally corrosive this is for everybody who's taken a part of it.
Right. So a couple of things. One is I really want to give props to The Daily Show for doing that segment. That was probably risque, even though y'all touch upon a lot of controversial topics, you know, when it comes to porn, that usually is an area that everybody can go, like, we all watch it, but we all pretend that we don't and that it's dirty and it's gross. And I use the clip in our presentations when we're talking about decolonizing sex, as well as educating therapists and medical providers on how they can communicate with, you know, with their clients in using adult entertainment. So, you know, it's like using something that we know everybody watches, The Daily Show, and being like, see, people are talking about it in mainstream. And, you know, even they're able to make the connection. So, of course, you can at your higher level make this connection for your folks, and also challenge your own attitudes and behaviors on sex, specifically by what you watch and how that perpetuates in your work that you do. But our work, you know, we draw it out even beyond porn into sex work, right? Because people who produce who perform in porn and produce porn are sex workers. And it's really important for us to normalize sex work. So when we are talking to, and we provide education to therapists, medical providers, even realtors, like how y'all are missing out on a population of folks that are looking for safe places to live. And affordable, you know,
take their money.
But in order to take their money, they have to trust you. Right. And you have to legitimize the work that we're doing and validate us and not discriminate. So oftentimes I'm always coming at it from the perspective of, like, we are a huge population. There's someone in your family that engages in sex work. And if they don't, they probably will, looking at the projections of the economy right now. Right. So go ahead and do something.
Oh, it's a lot of people on OnlyFans. That pandemic hit, all them OnlyFans shut up.
Yeah. It showed in. So we need to go back
and
to the lockdown.
They made money too. They making bank on that OnlyFans. I seen them numbers. I said, man, let me go on, get me some big dick pills.
You don't even have to do that. Everybody, there's somebody for everybody.
Oh, there's someone for you, Roy.
There's something for you. There are coins
I
for
heard
you,
Trevor
too.
I heard Trevor Noah was leaving The Daily Show. I said, man, let me see what this OnlyFans talking about. Check it out.
No, really. So, you know, it has been so important for us to normalize sex work, normalize porn, right? That you watch it and you should feel good about watching it. It's a form of entertainment, just like everything else. When you know, you should be able to watch it with the sound on. You should be able to watch it without being offended. You should be able to find a reflection of yourself. And so really helping the consumer, like, take some charge of what they're consuming. You don't have to just eat it because it's in front of you. There is a menu that's out there, and we help them learn how to shop for it. So, you know, royalfetishxxx.com.
Go check it, royalfetishxxx.com.
Who is responsible for making effective change? You know, we've talked about the production companies. We talked about the way a website will take a video that ain't even what the slug title says it is, just because they know to get someone to click on it and stay within the site. So they'll augment the title of something that a production company made. Or is it the consumer? What responsibilities do the consumer, like, who could help? Who was the next person to join you? Like, when Batman went and got Commissioner Gordon to help him clean up Gotham, who is the next person? Is it the consumer? Is it the production company? Is it the websites and the distributors? Like, I'll start with you, King.
I think it's everybody, to be honest, but I think it's very important, the work that we do, to inform the consumer of how to purchase non-racist and ethically made porn. So, you know, if somebody doesn't know that they can go to Royal Fetish or doesn't know the other sites that they can go to where they can find content that is not only, you know, pro everybody and non-racist, but also where they can go where they know that the performers are involved in acts that they enjoy, that they're not there on some, you know, desperation, then they'll make the right decision. It's like that scene with Elijah Muhammad telling Malcolm X, if you choose between the dirty water and the clean water, people are going to choose the clean water. And people might not want to think of porn as clean and dirty water, but there is some porn with clean water out there that you can find that has all the things that you're looking for, that involve all your fantasies and show you different routes of pleasure, but you can do it in an ethical way.
Yeah, it's all parties involved, everybody that is benefiting from porn. So the production companies need to stop being lazy, like fix the template. The scenes need to be more reflective of the people that are in them and the people that are watching them. The performers, I definitely feel like we have a responsibility to have some advocacy, some self-advocacy, and draw the picket line somewhere. You know, not everybody could jump off set, but you could try to negotiate. You can be upfront with what you're comfortable with before having that little bit of racism sprinkled on you, right? Like you mentioned. So go into those situations already describing, you know, what your boundaries are. I think the consumers also need to follow the performers directly. And, you know, I say the easiest way for the consumers to engage with work that they could feel good about is if the performer is promoting it. Usually we're not going to promote something that didn't make us feel good on set, or that we're not proud of, or that we didn't have consent in the labeling of it, right? So, you know, if you're going to watch something, like, get to know the performers. And this helps us also humanize the industry itself. It's like, oh, I like what King had to say. Okay, go find his work and look at what he's promoting and purchase that, or watch those scenes, because more than likely we are going to, again, promote the things that we feel good about. And then finally, I do think it is the advertisers. They're making money off of our backs, but they're not willing to hear our demands. So it is really important that advertisers stop pouring money into sites that won't acknowledge that this stuff is problematic and that it needs to be removed. So yeah, and if you see stuff, like, the same way you can, I think for consumers, I don't want to put so much responsibility when people are like anxious to have a orgasm that they have to like stop and write a letter before they can engage in the work, right? But one of the things that you can do, the way that we touch all forms of social media and content, is like, don't like it, like report it, right? Or just put a thumbs down and keep it moving if you have to. So it's a small way, but it lets people know that are putting the shit out that it's like, oh, this didn't do so well. Something about it, maybe I should take the, you know, racial slur out of it.
You know what we need, Stacey?
Hmm.
We need like a ethical porn logo. You know how they got that recycle logo? You know,
the vegan like, logo.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Like the organic, like yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't murder nobody to make this product, and then the little seal. Well, thank you all so much. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you to our guests, Stacey, King, Jasmine. Thank you all for going beyond the scenes with me. Now I'm gonna
appreciate it.
Open up these tabs that I had minimized real quick. Play the theme music. There we go. Oh, hello. Hello. Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.